16 minutes past the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show asking a question of the day. If you want to post your comment on Facebook or Twitter, we've got a number who've done that. Mike Allen Show, the handle. It's the 24th anniversary of the death of Freddie Mercury, one of the most powerful voices in hard rock music history. My question is, who do you think is the most powerful vocalist in hard rock music history? John Bon Jovi getting some votes, living on a prayer. Our guest today, somebody who lives on a prayer on a regular basis, especially when her Florida Gators are playing, and she is Chelsea Zimmerman. Chelsea, hello.
Hello. Good morning.
You like that sports reference I threw in there, you know?
We're doing surprisingly well. So
Florida Atlantic almost beat you, though.
Yes, I know. I'm hoping it lasts, but I'm not, you know.
You're not holding
your breath. I'm trying not to be overconfident. We've got Florida State coming up and possibly Alabama, so.
Yeah, that won't be easy.
No.
Too bad you can't play Kentucky every week.
Exactly.
Well, thank you. We have Thanksgiving coming up, of course. I know you're going to be traveling. I hope you have a great one, by the way.
Thank you. You too.
So people may hear the term CRISPR, and they think it's either some sort of snack or some way of keeping food fresh. But it's an acronym that's a little bit more troubling than that. So help fill us in.
Well, I think we talked about this a few months ago when the Chinese scientists had kind of announced that they were doing this in human embryos. But the technique, it's a gene editing technique. CRISPR, the actual acronym, what that stands for, I'm not fully aware. I just know that it's an enzyme complex that they inject the embryos with, which binds and then splices DNA at specific locations. And so the complex can be programmed to target a problematic gene, which is then replaced or repaired by another molecule introduced at the same time. So I think this has been going on for a while in adult cells and in animal embryos, but there has so far not been published reports of its use in human embryos until earlier this year when the Chinese said they were doing it. So they set out to see if the procedure could replace a gene in a single cell fertilized human embryo. So as a technology, it's only really been in the public spotlight for about a year. And but already, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of Chinese research facilities are using the technique on a range of animals. And that was recently brought to light in an article on BioEdge, one of my go-to places for getting some of this information. And they've been using it to create genetically enhanced goats and sheep and pigs and other animals. So some of these examples include, like specific examples, include a study that was published this September into enhancing goat muscle and hair growth. So in early stage goat embryos, researchers had successfully deleted two genes which suppress both hair and muscle growth. And the result was 10 kids exhibiting both larger muscles and longer fur. Another Chinese institute recently announced that they would be selling micro pigs as pets. This was originally created these pigs as models for human disease by applying this gene editing technique to a small breed of pig known as a Bama. Whatever, I'm not familiar with that, but so now they're breeding these kind of pigs, these smaller pigs, and now they're going to be selling what they call micro pigs for pets. And so it's
micro pigs. So get it on your Christmas wish list right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Chelsea Nancy Zimmerman, who blogs at reflectionsofaparalytic.com. She's also the editor-in-chief of Catholic Lane and does a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of keeping an eye on bioethical issues from a Catholic perspective. I mean, there's always, when these things start to happen, too, that the end game is never just animal.
Right. Well, and the end game is never just...
though, right? I mean, the end game is always...
In the end game is never just treating disease, which is what they've initially introduced this technology for. You know, we're talking about, you know, they want to replace damaged genes and see if they can cure and treat diseases this way. But as we're seeing with what they do in animals, you know, suppressing or deleting genes that suppress hair and muscle growth and creating goats with larger muscles and longer fur. I mean, you know, who, you know, to not believe that that would be done in similar experimentation like that would be done in human models once it got that far is a little naive. I mean, you know, we already know that even with the technology we do have for detecting certain diseases and things in the womb or prior to being implanted. I mean, embryo screening is a big thing in IVF. And we know that parents are looking to have specific kind of children when they use those technologies. We know that... you know, sex selection is a big thing in IVF. People come over here to the United States, pay $50,000 or just to make sure they give birth to a baby girl or a baby boy, you know? So we already know that parents, intended parents who use these technologies are interested in that kind of thing. So once this starts being done, being able to be done in humans, I mean... of course that's going to happen. It's not going to be limited to just treating diseases.
Well, there was a recent opinion piece in the New York Times, which would hardly be accused of being a bioethical watchdog newspaper, I guess. Right. Elizabeth Alter, assistant president, a professor of biology at CCNY, stressed the general need for regulation in the use.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good news.
CRISPR, because as we kind of do this, we will.
Right. That's the kind of good news about this, is that the scientific community is not necessarily all on board with this. They are, thankfully, there is a large percentage of the scientific community that's very cautious of this technology, not just because of how it could be used for designer babies and things like that, but we don't even know how safe it is for humans. I mean, this is genetic modification that will be inherited from one generation to the next, and this is not something we've been able to do yet, and we don't know the consequences of that. And so there is a large percentage of scientists who want to at least put a moratorium on doing this in humans, which is good. But as you and I know, I mean, the only way to really stop this from happening is to put a ban on it altogether. And that's what I think this is a wake-up call for places like China and the U.S. to follow the lead of many other countries who have legally banned germline genetic modifications strictly because of the danger to future generations. You know, and the more we just let this keep going, I mean, these are examples of what the Chinese scientists are doing in animals, but we already know they're experimenting with human embryos. So it's only a matter of time before we hear about their breakthroughs in that.
Why does this stuff seem to happen? It seems like a lot of these things happen outside the U.S., and oftentimes they happen in maybe some Asian countries. Is there less regulation in places like China, for example? Is that the deal?
There is, but I wouldn't be surprised to find out it's happening here in the United States. I mean, the first cloned human embryos were cloned right here in the United States, where there's absolutely no regulation on this kind of experimentation. There's regulation on funding for it, for federal funding for it. And in many states, they have regulation on that. And I think the FDA has kind of made themselves a regulator for things like three-parent IVF, and to where they they're actually having a discussion about that at the FDA right now, where people have to get permission from the FDA to be able to do it, but there's no actual ban on this kind of research here. And so, I mean, you do hear this kind of thing is happening in China, but I would not be surprised if it is happening here in the United States and we just haven't heard about it yet, because that's what happens with this research, is we don't hear about it going on until they have something to publish and share with us. So, and we know that there's more Chinese more than just the one research team that published this earlier this year. We know there are several others who have mentioned that they're working on this.
And then once it happens, we're seen as the the persistent scolds who want to stop progress and from helping people. We're talking with Chelsea Zimmerman, who blogs at reflectionsofaparalytic.com, also the editor-in-chief at Catholic Lane. Chelsea, we're going to have to go to break. When we come back, we'll pick this back up, and particularly what you said about the long-term genetic implications and this whole issue of the rights of future generations, particularly in light of National Adoption Month and third-party reproduction. We'll get into all that. Though you are in speaking against this, I'm afraid genetic modification may be Kentucky's only chance to beat Florida. recruits full of genetic modifications. But
so there's hope for you yet.
I'm willing to sacrifice football success for bioethical principles. I just want you to know.
All right.
We'll be back in just a minute with Chelsea. If you've got a question, 573-4BREAD-4. Be back on the other side of the break. We'll give it.